Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is a show about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will become. I believe that 100%. And I also believe that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, it then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. And while none of that sounds easy or comfortable, neither is being a person that society has placed a limit upon you, and you are proving over and over again how you can bust through those limits. And I am so excited to share with you today my guest, Stephanie. I really don't know Stephanie very well, but we do have a lot in common, as we just found out before the show started. But as you can see, she has IEP behind her name. And for anyone who's watched, you know that I am a master IEP coach, educational consultant, and Stephanie is also a master IEP coach. We just haven't had opportunity to really get to know each other. So I'm excited because I'm going to get to know her a little bit better as she shares not only her story, but the journey of her entire family. So, Stephanie, thank you so much for being on today and welcome. How are you?
I am great. Thank you, Shelley. I am honored to be here. I appreciate you giving me the time, and I am so excited to share the story of my family, some of our personal struggles and some of our personal victories with you today.
Awesome. Awesome. So I always forget to do, because I always feel like I'm rambling on so much at the beginning, and then I'm excited to talk to my guests and I forget the kind of businessy stuff. So if you're watching, please be sure to like and then give us a comment in the chat if you're watching live with the hashtag live and where you're watching from. And if it's a replay, that you give us a hashtag replay. And also be sure to subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, because you don't want to miss any of these hashtag no limit stories. They are so amazing and wonderful. And if you're watching on Facebook or LinkedIn, be sure that you give it a like as well. All right, business out of the way. Stephanie, tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your family.
Sure. So I have a very deep and complicated relationship with special education. I am first and foremost a special needs mom of two amazing children that God has blessed me with, but they each come with their own set of challenges. I am a former special educator, and we'll talk about why it's former maybe somewhere in here. And I myself am a person with a rare genetic condition and therefore have a disability as well. I've taken all of those things and become super passionate about coaching families and helping families to negotiate through just some of the challenges of having special needs and working through schools and figuring out how to make sure kids are getting what they need. And so that has led me to living my lifelong passion of becoming a special education advocate.
That is awesome. And so again, there's something else that we have in common is I am also a former special education teacher, special educator for 30 years now. Some of that was being a paraprofessional. Some of that was being a substitute. And that's actually what I kind of my role in the world of special education in schools is right now. But a lot of that was being a special education teacher. And yeah, there's I'm looking forward to finding out why it's former for you as well. So let's jump right into you choose. Do you want to talk about your genetic condition first, or do you want to talk about your children first?
Oh, let's go with my genetic condition. So it is May, and it is Ehlers-Danlos Awareness Month, which is the condition that I am diagnosed with. You know, I feel like it was a late diagnosis for me. I was just diagnosed. I have to think, how old am I now? We won't say how old I am, but 4 years ago. So I essentially was living just kind of in this middle world, the middle of understanding and knowing that my body was experiencing some complications and some difficulties, but I didn't have an answer. And in the world of, you know, medical issues, it is a challenge. It is so hard to live not knowing the answer. I believe, you know, I must have seen 20 different doctors at any point in time based off of the symptoms, so different specialists. And I honestly felt like they thought I was crazy. is what that kind of lent itself to. And then thankfully, just by the grace of God, we fell into the hands of an amazing rheumatologist who started to put together some of the pieces. I feel like sometimes in the medical world, things are pretty disjointed, kind of discombobulated. You've got this specialist here, that specialist there. And sometimes finding the time to kind of bring those pieces together is personally where my struggle kind of began and where things started to essentially fall apart. And so thankfully we found somebody who was willing to do the hard work to start to put together some of the pieces of the puzzle. And I landed in the hands of a very well-known geneticist who was finally able to give answers for that.
Awesome. So I have heard of Ehlers-Danlos, but I really don't know a lot about it. So can you share with the audience like how it affects you and maybe some of the symptoms that you were exhibiting all these years that nobody knew what they were?
Absolutely. So Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is a connective tissue disorder, which is just sounds really complicated. And in some ways it is, I guess, let's be honest, it is complicated, but essentially it's a systemic issue where my body produces excess amounts of faulty collagen. For those who don't know, collagen is the glue that holds your body together. So unfortunately, in the world of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, things like dislocations or partial dislocations known as subluxations happen frequently. And for me, it has also impacted some of my organs. So meaning that you know, that collagen is supposed to keep things where they belong and keep things functioning in a normal and healthy way. And unfortunately, my collagen has betrayed me a little bit. We are seeing some difficulties, you know, with joint pain, dislocations, subluxations, and also some organ issues.
Wow. And so you went all of your life until, you said 4 years ago?
4 years, yes.
Getting this diagnosis. So yeah. How many of those sort of symptoms, like those subluxations, did you experience throughout your life, or was that not necessarily a big one for you?
It was just like a, I don't know. I feel like it was always an interesting question. Like when we went back and talked to doctors and, you know, they'd say like, oh, did this happen when you were younger? Tell me a little bit about that. Or like, you know, didn't I realize that that wasn't quote unquote normal? And my favorite thing to joke with everybody is say, well, this is the body that God gave me. And it's the one I've been living in my whole life. So I had no idea. Exactly. Like define normal. Not my favorite word. Like normal is on the eye of the beholder, really.
Right.
It's all about perspective. So when I was younger, I did experience some joint subluxations, some minor ones. I think one of the bigger ones for me is that a lot of people, I have the hypermobile type of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So I was kind of the weird party trick person. Like, can you do this with your body? Can you do this? Okay. When I was growing up, so it was always super flexible. Unfortunately, what that wound up doing was putting some major wear and tear on my joints. So I did have some partial dislocations growing up. But again, it's not terrible. I mean, I was kind of an active kid, so it didn't necessarily stand out to my parents as anything that was out of the ordinary.
Okay. So you mentioned you were the kind of the party trick person. And I was thinking when you said that, like when I was growing up, I had some kids that I went to school with who were double jointed. Mm-hmm. So is that sort of kind of what
sort of. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I was like probably a double U-sitter. I know all the PTs are out there like, you know, I could still be a double U-sitter, but I know better. I used to like sit and sleep in very strange and awkward positions. I could, you know, bend my elbows back so that, you know, they hyperextended. So just strange things like that. I could do the splits, which made me, you know, super popular in gymnastics.
Right. Oh, yeah, sure. The reason I'm kind of digging into this a little bit is because, like I said, I have heard of it. I'm just curious if, you know, there might be somebody who is watching who's thinking, could this have been me? Could this be my child? Mm-hmm. Obviously we're not diagnosing anybody, but I just want people to understand, you know, hey, if these things are going on in your normal life,
right.
You might want to be sure to bring this up to your physician. So is it anything, does it fatigue you?
Yeah. So fatigue is a common issue with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I get asked the question often. I do share my story very openly just on my personal Facebook page. So feel free to follow and listen, especially in this month of May, as I'm working to bring awareness just to not only my community, but also to the medical community, because it is very difficult to find medical professionals who are well-versed in EDS. So for people who have questions, I just got called this week by somebody who saw the zebra and was like, hey, I have some questions. You know, I think it's important, and just in anything in life, like being a mom of two kids with special needs, I think sometimes we get so caught up in the diagnosis and so caught up in like the what is, what's wrong, right? Like the label. And whereas, you know, my journey is important and I want to share, I think for me, when people ask the question of like, you know, I'm concerned, you know, I just kind of bring them back to this idea of, first of all, it is a rare condition. Right. But second of all, that it, you know, it's just important to be really mindful and paying attention to your body, right? And that would include if you're watching your child and having concerns. So for me, some of the, you know, precipitating factors were larger scale, but I was much older when we started to have questions. On the early on, just the hypermobility of the joints, meaning that my joints could stretch a little further than the average bear. I had a lot of what I would call growing pains and complaints of growing pains. Okay. Growing up long past my time. I probably peaked in sixth grade. So meaning I stopped growing after sixth grade. But I was still having growing pains thereafter. So I would say to parents, like, those are good things to look at. I was kind of the accident prone kid. I was guaranteed, you know, at any point in time to be on the floor because I fell or did something not to be super alarmed with. But those are kind of the things that kind of led me to understanding a little bit more about this journey and essentially being able to ask some more questions overall.
Yeah. Like I said, I've heard of it. And I want to say, out of the thousands of kids that I know about that are somewhere, you know, within the world of special education, I think I've come across one person. But the name stuck out with me.
Yeah.
And so that's why I remember it. So yeah. Do you happen to know the number?
You know what? I feel like I should, because it is awareness month, but I feel like it's hard. It is like a spectrum disorder, just similar to autism. So meaning that there's lots of different types and kinds, and they're all kind of subcategorized. HEDS, which is the hypermobile type, which is what I have, is the most common form of Ehlers-Danlos syndromes. But I don't necessarily have the stats on it. But I mean, I'm not surprised that in your world, you've only seen one. And in my world as an educator, I have seen zero. Other than I obviously knowing that I have it, and I've got one that's one of my kids is a chip off the old block. So,
So that's kind of what I wanted to get into next was, you know, so since you didn't find out about this until 4 years ago, which, that's unfortunate, I think. And the reason I say, I think, is it depends on how much it might've seemed like it was holding you back that you hadn't known what it was called.
Right.
Until that point. But if it wasn't really holding you back so much, maybe it isn't one of those things, you know, like, I guess my thinking here is like the treatment is the right word. Like, what do you do for it once you know you have it?
I think for me, and I'm talking as an adult now, and I've only known EDS in the adult world. So I didn't know that I had it before. I do like that you said, I think, because I think, you know, moving back, I don't know that I would have changed anything. I think it was really important for me to enjoy my childhood and my formative years without the doom and gloom of the cloud over me. So there is no cure for Ehlers-Danlos syndromes. You know, we're talking about OT, PT services, bracing, taping, and what I call just basic joint preservation. You know, I've made some lifestyle changes as far as my career, even as far as like the home that I live in, limiting the number of stairs I have. And these are choices that I've made as kind of in adulthood that I've, you know, kind of gotten older. I shared a little bit that my daughter, we're starting to see some signs of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome in her. And we are choosing the path of what I experienced, which is working hard to give her the most typical childhood possible while giving her the support of an OT and PT to ensure that she's continuing to make progress and that we're monitoring her joint health overall. But I don't know that even if we had a label for her, that we would share that with her right away. And that's just our personal decision, because we want her to be able to live life and not be concerned, right? We want her to live life to the fullest and be functional and we don't want any label to get in the way of that. So,
right. And that is the unfortunate part of our society and our education system and our medical world, that if you give someone a label, that seems to be the focus, and that's what everything else stems off of, instead of, okay, there's this, but this isn't driving everything else.
Right.
You know, there's this whole person.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, that I understand what you're saying. And so does it affect, or for you, let's talk about you, keep talking about you for a couple more minutes. Did it affect you, to your knowledge? I know, because you would have to look back and think about this, your performance in school specifically.
I mean, I wasn't ever the most agile kid. Like, I wasn't, you know, trying out for the baseball team.
Right.
And those types of things. You know, obviously the joint pain and the subluxations were just curious. I think it was probably hardest for me growing up and being the clumsy kid, right? Like,
right.
The one who, you know, everybody just kind of joked about and made fun of a little bit for that. But as far as my ability to keep up academically, my ability to just kind of find my people, which were not, like, you know, the athletes, that's not me.
Right. And you know, I mean, like, yeah, whether you have the Ehlers-Danlos or you have nothing.
Exactly.
Everybody has their group. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, I don't think it necessarily impacted. I think maybe one of the bigger ones was writing. I had a lot of fatigue with writing. I felt often like I had all these great grandiose ideas. Like, I had a robust vocabulary and all these things I wanted to say. And would oftentimes just kind of dumb down my writing because it was just hard to bring pencil to paper, my hand fatigued. I don't know that I necessarily understood that at the time. Maybe that I was capable of what I was more than what I was actually putting on paper, but I was also a student who excelled academically. So, you know, maybe I would have been an honors kid
right.
in writing, but, you know, I just kind of dumbed it down a bit to make sure that I could get through
right.
everything.
Right.
So that's probably the only thing I could think of that I maybe would have been, you know, excelled a little bit more, but writing.
And as you're talking about the writing piece, that is what the person that I knew who had Ehlers-Danlos had the most difficulty with. And I reached out to a friend of mine who is a dysgraphia expert. I didn't know the person had Ehlers-Danlos when I reached out to the dysgraphia expert. It was her who said to me, has the family looked into Ehlers-Danlos? Because
wow.
The things that I was telling her, she
good for
said,
her.
That's what this sounds like.
Yes.
Right. So, you know, our OTs, our PTs, any of our related service personnel, honestly, I mean, that's why they do what they do. They have expertise in things that the rest
for
of
sure.
us in education may not know or have
yep.
that extensive knowledge about. And so, yeah, I suggested it to the family. And then it was found out that, yeah, it was a boy, I think, that it was Ehlers-Danlos that this young gentleman was dealing with. So, and yeah, it was the same thing. Could tell you the most amazing stories and answers to questions, but to put it down on paper was nothing compared to the
yeah.
oral version.
Yeah, I mean, motor skills are hard for people like me. You know, it's difficult. It's not like a won't do, it's a can't do. I mean, there's
right.
some pain that goes with that, and you're slower to produce. And, you know, I think there is, you know, I guess I've always just felt, even as a special educator for those kiddos who, you know, are a little bit more motorically challenged, have the smarts and the wits about them to be able to do things, but are kind of slowed down, essentially, by some of the motor deficits that they might have. It's probably because I take it personally. This is me, right?
Yeah.
But it's always been interesting, like, to just think that through, right? And I feel like in the world of special education, it is like a gaping abyss, like this idea of a can't do, a won't do, this discrepancy, right? Especially when we're talking about, like, you know, honor students and some of the functional performance issues they might have. So it's been interesting. And my son totally falls into that category as well. He does not have EDS.
Okay.
Like a recurring theme for us, I think. There's
right.
just this idea of like the unique within the unique. So I feel like that has just been my family. I was not the exception to that rule. You know, I feel like God brought me into the world of special education. And then I gave birth to a son with autism, right? So I was more equipped than I intended to be,
right?
Essentially. And I spent, you know, many, many years advocating on behalf of my son, and then had a premature daughter and spent years advocating for her medical needs. And what I didn't realize is that that was preparing me for the ultimate challenge would be to advocate for myself in this world. So,
yeah. And, you know, that's interesting because I find that to be true. I will be a mama bear for all kinds of other people.
Oh, yes.
Of course, including my own child, but for other people too. But if it's me,
so hard.
I'm fine. I don't need anything.
Yes. I'm like by nature, like a caretaker, just want to take care of everybody else. So this has been a challenge to think about, you know, or even practicing what you preach, like as a special educator, like just, you know, speaking positivity into parents and, you know, your kid can do it and they are capable. And then when something happens personally to you, you're like, oh, wait, you know, like, yes, I totally believed in your kid and my kid and everybody else's kids. But then like, for me, it was like, what the heck? You know,
like, well, yeah. And I think that's a great point too. One of the other areas that I love to work with is mental health. And I think it's so important that we do practice what we preach, but also then give grace to ourselves and to others that, oh yeah, we are going to have bad days or bad moments, or, you know, we're not going to be the most upbeat person every minute of every day. And that's okay. That's part of the journey. But we beat ourselves up when we have those moments. And I think we need to stop doing that and just go, you know what? Yeah. Today is not a great day, or this moment is not a great moment. And I'm going to let myself be in that for a little bit.
Right.
Not live there.
No.
And then move on.
Acknowledge for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So how has your life changed with the diagnosis? What things have gotten better? Has anything gotten worse?
I mean, I think it was the catalyst for change that I needed. I was a special education teacher. We have something in common. I started off as a paraprofessional, did some subbing, and then worked for 15 years as an actual case manager. The job was getting physically hard for me, and I am a 100% person, 100% plus person. I don't know how to underdo things. It's just not my personality.
Right.
And so giving, you know, 1,000% to my job meant that I was coming home and giving less than I was able, less than I wanted to my family. Right. It was also putting a lot of wear and tear on my joints. So that was one of the precipitating factors. That's one of the big changes that I made. It was one of the last things that I decided to do. I remember sitting in the geneticist's office and first having the freak out that I was in the geneticist's office, and I was expecting him to say no, and he said yes. And so the whole first meeting, all I could think about was my kids. Right. Like, I'm not sure what else you said after, yes, you have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. All I'm thinking about now is if it's a yes, then I'm worried about my kids. The second meeting with the geneticist, I went into full stubborn mode, which I am totally capable of on any given day at any point in time. You know, and it was, we were talking about, you know, lifestyle changes and some things that I could do to just kind of improve my quality of life. So it's to essentially preserve some energy so that I have energy left over to be able to do the things that I love to do. And the first thing that he mentioned was my job. And I was like, nope, nope, you will not. Like, that is the one place where I just feel like I don't have EDS. I get to be a teacher. I get to love on these kids. I get to just be me, right? I get to do the thing I love to do. And I think it was just a challenge to me in lots of ways. It was a challenge in my faith. It was a challenge for, you know, a grieving, I guess, potentially of the life that I thought I was going to live, or, you know, I thought I was going to retire as a special education teacher. That was my goal in life. So job change was a big one and probably one of the hardest decisions for sure. What that did was open up the doors to what I knew God was calling me to do, which was that as much as I loved being a special educator, I felt oftentimes very stifled in the very political world of special education. And I have just never been an inside of the box thinker. God has just blessed me with an out of the box brain and a heart to do anything and everything to help kiddos with special needs. And I oftentimes felt kind of like the enigma at the table. It was hard for me to not speak up. It was hard for me to see just some of the inbox ideas, like our kind of fabricated pre-cut things that happen in the world of special education. Right. This is what all kids get. So this is what this kid gets. This is what right. the system is set up for. And this is the structure that we're able to accommodate. And really difficult for me to see, you know, when we wound up with those really unique kiddos, like them being given the cookie cutter IEPs in there. So I think what Ehlers-Danlos did on the hard side was to take away the job I thought I was going to live with, but really was a catalyst for me to really think then about where my heart and my passion really lied. And as much as I love teaching, my heart has always been with parents. I was always the teacher at the table, like kicking parents under the table, like say no, right? right? Like it's a jumping off point for negotiation. the administrator's giving me the side eye at the table, like, listen, lady, you're gonna pipe down at this meeting. And, you know, I essentially was working my whole life as a mom for this moment, for, you know, being given two unique kids, working through the system and advocating for what they needed. So as hard as it was to leave my job, I really do think it was a positive change. It was hard to see in the moment because, of course, we all have thoughts and ideas of what our life is going to look like. And so after the initial kick in the gut, you know, and the initial like just dig in my heels and get stubborn, I can do this, nobody tell me no, I'm realizing now. But I think it also was good for me. So there's lots of things that have had to change. We moved our family from a two-story home into a ranch home. You know, it's a smaller house. It definitely is not the house I thought, like, okay, it's the house I thought, like, when my kids graduate, then we'll move to a ranch. I wasn't anticipating it earlier. But God has blessed us with a ranch home and, you know, a basement space that works so that I have an office and I can continue to work on this new business endeavor. It's been great, but there have been those types of changes that have happened. I have been able to now work on my own advocacy business, which allows me the flexibility to get into physical therapy and different doctor's appointments. And it was really hard for me to do that while I was working full time in the district. So,
yeah. Wow. It is incredible how parallel our journeys are. My earring and my headset are not liking each other. Why they keep getting attracted to each other, because I'm not touching either one of them, but they're fighting with me. I identified as, you know, if somebody asked me, what do you do? I'm a teacher. You know, I mean, that's who I was. I am a teacher. And God pulled me out of, I didn't say, oh, I'm going to leave teaching. I was not rehired. I had moved to a different job to try to shake things up in my world a little bit. And that year when that was over, and for those of you who don't know, I don't know if this is the way it is in all states, but in Illinois, you have to teach for 4 years before they have to give you a reason that they are not rehiring you for the following year. Mm-hmm. And the administrator had come in during evaluation time and he's like, you know, things are fine, you know, whatever, here's your evaluation. I thought, oh, great. This is, you know, for a first year in a new district, you know, this is where I should be. Came in 3 days later and he said, we're not rehiring you next year.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, wait, what? And I had a very inner peace that my validation does not come from human beings. Of course, around that inner peace, I was falling apart because I was like, well, but I'm a teacher. What do you mean? What do I, you know? And yeah, I sought the Lord and like, well, what do you want me to do now? And that's, you know, what brought me to where I am today. And that's the very short and condensed version, because this is your story, not mine. But it's very interesting how he changed. Like, he gave us a path.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you think you're going this way, but guess what? You made a plan. So now I'm going to move you over.
But I think you brought up something interesting. I think what, you know, like the internal battle that was happening was this idea of like what my plan was and how difficult it was to do what I call to fully surrender. But I think it's because my identity was so far wrapped up in exactly what you said, like, who are you? What do you do? Is I am a special education teacher.
Right.
And I think it was, you know, essentially his lesson to me that my identity should be in him, right. Not in what I do, not in calling myself mom or teacher or any other label that we put, not in calling myself a person with EDS. Like, so, I mean, it's still a struggle. I am still not perfect. It is really hard to get caught up in these labels and these definitions of what is important to me. But, you know, slowly but surely I'm learning that, you know, this exit stage left and here's a whole brand new world of, you know, unknowns. And like, you know, I was, our insurance was through the district. I was having medical issues. Like, it, you know, it was definitely a big leap of faith, but I am so thrilled to be on the other side of the table now. I feel 100% at peace that this is where I belong. And I am loving every part of helping families. So,
yeah, that is cool. What we do now is really, it really is amazing. And I'm so thankful that he did take me out of teaching, because I do feel that what I'm able to do now is even broader than what I was able to do as an educator. And I mean, I was pretty excited about that. So, so that's one of the things, y'all, that we found out that we had in common before the show started, is both of our deep faith. And so that was really cool for us to find that out about each other and to be able to share a little bit of the story with each other, but with all of you as well. So, are we ready to move on to your kids, or is there more of your journey that you want to talk about before we do that?
I am ready to move on.
Okay. All right. So tell us about your kiddos.
Okay. So I have two kiddos. I have an 18-year-old who's on the autism spectrum. He's the artist formerly known as Asperger syndrome. So he was diagnosed before the change in DSM, that. And he identifies more as having Asperger's.
Okay. Awesome. So I love that.
And then my daughter is 9. So we have quite the age difference between the two, but Amelia is her name. She was born at 29 weeks.
Wow.
And, you know, we had some subsequent health issues and some residual motor issues. She's doing so well now, but, you know, we had a really big struggle for a really long time with her.
Yeah. Oh, scary. 29 weeks. I had a niece that was born at 32 weeks and I thought that was scary. So 29 is, that's, and then of course, I forget, Kate Swenson on a couple of weeks ago, and she talked about, you know, once you have to tell that birth story, once you have a child who is a preemie or who gets eligibility for special education, you tell that birth story, the pregnancy story, you know, a million times, because you have to talk about all of that sort of stuff.
Every 3-year eval.
Exactly. Yes. So for those of you who don't have special education in your life, it is like they go through this and eventually the districts where I worked, they finally said, you know, it's updated information from the last 3-year eval. We don't need to go through everything all over again because nothing is new.
Right.
So, you know, if a parent happened to say, oh, you know, out of the 3 times that we've already done these 3-year reevaluations, I didn't remember X. Okay, throw that in there, but
sure.
You know, usually, you know, it's mostly for statistical purposes anyway, a lot of that information. So, but it's something that families in the special education process do go through every 3 years to get their child reevaluated and make sure that they are still eligible for special education. And yeah, you got to go through all that history stuff a lot of times. So, at 29 weeks, how long was she then in the hospital before she even got to come home?
So she was in the hospital for 2 months. We had 2 months in the NICU. We had 2 relatively uneventful months in the NICU. And I feel like first she was born at 3 pounds, 3 ounces. It was very interesting because they kept telling us like, oh, she's huge. And I thought like, what's wrong with you? Right. Like, I remember like I had a C-section, like, is it the drugs? Like what is wrong with these people? Right. Like huge. And then we moved in next to the, you know, pound and a half or and 2-pound baby.
Right.
I was like, okay, I get it. She is. She's huge in comparison. Yeah. It's all a matter of perspective.
Again, perspective. Yep.
You know, we had some uneventful days. She wound up in like moving into the less intensive part of the NICU for most of her stay is where she was over there. She was, I think she actually moved over on Christmas Day to the, not the intensive care unit, but the next unit over. We're just blessed. I don't even know what else to say about this. We had 2 months that were completely uneventful, which is almost unheard of in the NICU. And our stay there, we had babies pass and, you know, babies who were rushed to surgery. So we are just incredibly grateful that, you know, she was born strong because she's done really well. One of her largest struggles, and she actually went home with this struggle, was that she was silently aspirating when she was feeding. And she was a tough cookie, so we didn't necessarily know. We're going to call it mama's intuition. I remember bottle feeding one day and thinking like something is not right. I don't know what's going on. I don't have an answer. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. It is just my gut is telling me that there is something is wrong, which led them to do a swallow study. And sure enough, she was aspirating, which obviously is, you know, dangerous.
Right. You know, can you explain what that is? Just
sure.
For anyone that might not know.
So all of us have experienced when we say like, oh, that went down the wrong track, right? Like went down the wrong pipe. And, you know, you cough, your eyes water, and you have this moment. So essentially what that is that when you swallow, your liquids are meant to go down the track that essentially goes to your stomach. If somebody is aspirating, that liquid takes a wrong turn, heads down the trachea and ends up in your lungs. And so for somebody who is a silent aspirator, that means there is no choking or no sign of distress. And so people who have that difficulty have a high propensity for pneumonia. And in somebody as tiny as Amelia, that could have been fatal. And caught. So she actually came home to us on an NG tube, and we learned how to feed our child through an NG tube, as well as how to insert an NG tube, which is still traumatic.
Right.
To this day.
And again, can you explain what that is? And
like, sure. It's a nasal, a nasal gastric tube. So essentially it is a tube that went up her nose and it went all the way down and into the tube that goes into her stomach. So essentially we would feed her through that tube and it would provide her nourishment, but would ensure that none of the liquid was getting into her lungs. She didn't last too long with the NG tube. She was home. And after about 2 weeks of being home, we noticed like some really significant projectile vomiting, which was one of the signs, that we were in the trouble zone and needed to, reevaluate the situation. So 2 weeks after being home, she wound up back in the hospital. At that point, we realized she had significant GERD, so a significant reflux in a preemie who, you know, we were tracking weight, like with a fine tooth comb, like looking through on the scale every day.
Right.
Losing weight is a big deal. And she had started to drop some weight overall. So we made the really hard decision at that point to make the NG tube permanent. And so about a week after she was hospitalized, she wound up with a G tube. So that was a tube that was inserted directly into her stomach. And we used that for feeding, and she went NPO, which is a fancy way of saying she was just not allowed to have anything by mouth. So 3 months, we were able to start feeding therapy, and she had a significant journey. She was tube-fed. Complicated. She was tube-fed all the way up until age four. But in that in-between time, essentially, we had started to try to, like, put some food by mouth. So first, what was able to come for her were solid foods. They're a lot much easier to handle. Liquids, like fine liquids, like a water and stuff are much harder. So she started with solid foods and eventually she was taking all of her food by mouth and just liquids via tube. And then eventually we transitioned into no longer needing the tube. But I think she had her closure surgery around age four and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. In my book, Those Who Can't Teach, I have two students who had Mickey buttons.
Oh, nice.
Tubes.
Yeah.
So, I recall working with Kathleen, who she was diagnosed with something called Graves' disease. And so her metabolism, what that is her metabolism is like just on hyperdrive all the time. And so she eats.
Mm-hmm.
And by her mouth, but then she still has to get nutrients and calories through that G tube. I don't know if she still does, but at the writing of the book, she did. And when she had been my student, she did. So, there's a lot of medically complex things going on. And so you had all of that stuff. And then you said earlier that she has Ehlers-Danlos, right?
Oh, so we're suspecting that she's a branch off wheel.
Oh, right.
I'm sorry. Yeah, she definitely has some hypermobility going. I think our biggest challenge for Amelia, and I'll just share candidly, is like she is smart as a whip, cognitively there, never had any speech issues. She had EI services to address, obviously, the feeding. So feeding therapy at home, so early intervention services. She had OT and PT services to kind of work on those preemie muscles. So she was not the exception to the rule. She had some pretty stiff preemie muscles. So a lot of preemies just struggle with muscle development. It's one of the last things to develop in utero. And she was super stiff.
Right. I didn't realize muscle development was at the end. So that's,
yes, yeah. That and your and lungs are one of mm-hmm. the last to develop as well. So she just had from both ends. So she's just been our strange child in the world of special education. Like, she just challenged like every rule that was ever made for like, this is what an IEP kid looks like. I feel like that has been our hardest to advocate, which sounds crazy because she has such a complex medical history, but like we were just so blessed. I think we happened to be, and that happened. I feel like it was a God thing that my OBGYN was at the only hospital in our area that was a level 3 NICU. And as a 29 weeker, she would have been shipped off to a 29 week hospital and I would have stayed, which was not okay with me. So that worked out. And then subsequently finding a team, like, thankfully we live in the Chicagoland area with some of the largest, most well-known hospitals, but we're just tremendously blessed, like from her EI team to her medical team. Like, we were so well taken care of. And she was so well taken care of in all of this. And then school was a challenge. Like, it was just a challenge, like sending your 3-year-old at the time to school, still using a G-tube, was a struggle. And helping to describe to a preschool team that she had no academic challenges, no speech challenges, right? And like, I don't know how many of you know the world of special education, but those are two big ones, right? Like, those are your like surefire way into IEP land, is if you're experiencing some academic deficits or some speech and language deficits. It's just much easier for, I think, the special education team to hang their hats on that. Like, oh, yep, that makes sense. But instead I brought a kid who wasn't eating or drinking.
Right.
And had some motor issues that needed to be, and she, you know, needed to be taken care of and or addressed or supported. And I'm not sure they knew what to do. the gut reaction was, well, she's on par academically and doesn't have speech needs, so, you know, she doesn't require services. And we, you know, obviously fought the good fight and she did wind up with an IEP, but she's been our biggest challenge at the IEP team.
That's interesting that you brought that up, because I have a situation right now and we're trying to get the school to understand that this child can have an eligibility. So tell me what the eligibility that your daughter has for an IEP.
Sure. I mean, we live in the state of Illinois, so DD is an eligibility category, so developmental delay. I really had a hard time with that. personally.
Yeah, but that only goes until age 9.
It does only go until age 9. She is a 504 student now, so things have changed a little bit. You will just learn about me, hopefully, over time. Like, I am definitely not the parent who ever wanted her kids over-supported. Like, we have worked so hard here at home. They have worked so hard, and we have always just lived with the philosophy of, like, my biggest compliment, right? Or, like, our biggest no is that they have been exited. Right. From services, they don't need as much anymore. So I will preface that. I know that's not everybody's thoughts. So I just want to let people know, like, that has been my philosophy as a mom. And so she has transitioned into a 504 plan. But we actually really fought hard on that first evaluation to go other health impaired. And the reason why it was just super important to us is that Amelia had a very significant health history. So she wasn't the kid where every three years that the health update was the same as it was the 3 years before, right? Mm-hmm. And just being a special educator, I know that there's a big difference between picking up an IEP of any kiddo, you know, age 3 through 9 until that eligibility expires for developmentally delayed. And I wanted to make sure that whoever picked up that IEP understood that this was different, that there were some different things that were happening. Right. So she was actually held under the eligibility of other health impairment for all of her IEP years.
Yeah. And that is what we're trying to convince this particular school of, because, and I looked up the definition. I mean, you know, we're not lawyers, we're IEP coaches, but I looked up the definition of other health impaired. And like the very first part of it talks about muscle tone and, you know, and, and the school's like, no, child doesn't qualify for other health impaired. I'm like, but this is what this particular, and this child isn't the one with Ehlers-Danlos, but I'm like, this is what this child's issue that is driving their fatigue, that is driving their, you know, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it's really interesting. Kind of what you said a little bit ago about, you know, schools have a tendency to, there's like the big, I don't know if it's the big three or four, but, you know, there's like autism, specific learning disability, emotionally behavioral, and then, you know, other health impaired, but only if it's ADHD or ADD or something like that. They don't branch out, you know?
Yeah, only what's comfortable and what I've heard of.
Right.
And I'm speaking as a parent. I'm not speaking as IEP coach on that one. Like, as a parent, that's what that felt like, right? Like, it was uncomfortable. And it was uncomfortable for us, right? Like, it was uncomfortable for us as parents on the other end of the table. So I get it, right? I mean, there's fear in what you don't know. And I feel like Amelia challenged what I will call like one of the largest challenges in special education, which is this idea of like a functional deficit versus an academic deficit. And I feel like it is really hard. I mean, in my years as a special educator, I can't tell you how many times I got into robust, challenging conversations with other staff and administration about this idea of a functional performance deficit versus an academic deficit. It's harder to kind of put your mind around, or like, you know, it's harder to find the data to prove that a student is capable of more than what they're doing, right? And especially if that child is on par academically. And so we definitely came with a challenge to the table, because this mama was not accepting no. Like, I could not drop off my child with a tube at 3 years old and not know that she was going to have the supports that were necessary and the supports that I knew would only be offered to her through an IEP.
So, right. Yeah. Well, kudos to you for battling that and for trusting that mama's intuition, like what you talked about with the aspiration and yeah, there is, we definitely want to stay with what we're comfortable with. I think that's a great way to put it. You know, that we don't know things. We get a little fearful and say, no, that's not it. It has to be this, because this is what I know. This is what I've heard. This is how I know what to, you know, help this situation.
And I get it on the other end. As a teacher, I get it. You know, like, Amelia challenged the resources they had, period. Right? Like, she was a three-year-old who was going to require nursing services, but wasn't their stereotypical child who would qualify for nursing services, right? Like, she wasn't in a wheelchair or didn't require substantial physical or medical support to make it through the school day. So I get it, right? Like, that's where it's always been hard for me, like, sitting at the table, like, as mom, right? Like, understanding and knowing my child versus understanding the system and the structure, and understanding that what I was going to be requesting was going to be a challenge to the team. It was going to be out of the box, like, hi, like, I get it, but I'm about to like blow your mind and request something that is not possible, but certainly she's probably the only one in your building, right?
Who has that concern.
So
yeah, exactly. And like we said, it is a, you know, whether she has this or not, the Ehlers-Danlos, it is a rare condition. And as I said, you know, one out of thousands of people that I've ever dealt with that I've even heard about that had it. But most people have never heard of Ehlers-Danlos. And, you know, that's something with our special education system that is a fantastic thing, but also it's a very scary thing, because the millions of people or billions of people that are on the planet, we're always, it seems like, finding, oh no, you know, here's another genetic disorder, or here's another medical anomaly, or here's another whatever, and it has another name. And so, you know, we have said in the United States, everyone who has some sort of a different need that isn't within that, like, you know, 80% of people that are typical, are normal, you know, those are the we're going to help them. But yet, you know, as teachers, like I said, we're used to those three or four things that I mentioned, you know, the most prevalent ones, but we're getting so many unique and individualized.
Imagine that.
And I emphasize that because we work under a law that is Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and we write up a document that is individualized education program. But that first letter seems to be forgotten.
It's hard.
Over and over. Every time I turn around, it's like, no, this is who you're looking at. This child right here. don't think about the classroom that the teacher that you're thinking, oh, this is special education, so this student's going to go with this teacher. Mm-hmm. Oh, you got to think about that individual and exactly what that individual's needs are.
Yes. If I had a dollar for every time I've used two phrases, like one, eligibility is important, but it does not matter if we call them a purple spotted monster. Like, let's move on, move forward and get to the plan. So I've said that many times mm-hmm. at a table. And the second thing I've said very often is, like, you know, when we hear things that are like systemically, like, well, we don't have another space available, or we don't, or you do that here. I've heard that on occasion too.
Right.
You know, I've said things to the effect of, like, what happens to the individualized part of this? So I did not ask what was structurally convenient for the people at the table. I asked what would individualize this child's plan and meet their needs, right? And obviously that doesn't mean that there's not a conversation that should happen about the logistics and how we make this happen. But the first planning that should be happening is to talk about the child's individual needs and not about the system and how we're going to try to fit that in. That's a secondary issue that certainly we can talk and work through. But I have caught myself many times on behalf of my own children and other people's children bringing that up often.
Yeah, it is extremely important. And it is definitely something that is, I just think, either people are scared of it because they don't know how, or they just forget it. I'm not really sure. But go ahead.
Yeah, there's fear in the unknown. I mean, as a teacher, as a special education teacher, like getting the kiddo with the diagnosis I did not know, right? Mm-hmm. Especially the medical diagnosis. Like, there was fear in picking up that IEP and trying to educate myself and figure out what would work best. So I get it. I completely understand as an educator. And I think sometimes it is fear driven, right?
Yeah. Sorry, my little dog is not feeling well, and he was just making an unusual noise, so I just had to check him out. But as this is a show about breaking through limits, and we only have about 8 minutes, so I want to make sure that we cover, because mostly we've been talking about your daughter, but I know there were some hints of your son's in that with the topic that was being discussed. Yeah. So tell us about some of those things, you know, that... I mean, just getting that getting that eligibility of other health impaired definitely was for breaking over a limit. But you said your son, who is formerly known as being a child on the Asperger's spectrum, but is not any longer. So that's a challenge and a busted through limit. So tell us a little bit more about him, and then anything else.
So he definitely still has Asperger's. What I meant is that he doesn't like to say he has autism. He prefers to say he has Asperger's. I'm not entirely sure why, but we're going to go with it because he's 18. It works for him. And if any of you have teenagers, you just know that sometimes you just don't challenge.
There are some battles. Yeah.
It's just not worth it, people. It's not. On that. So, I mean, Elijah, I knew young. I was a young single mom when I had him, but I had some special education experience, but he just came out of the womb different. So, I mean, for him, I think the challenges that we faced just early on were definitely this idea of being higher functioning. So again, this idea where he did have some academic discrepancies, but they were not wild. He looked typical. He looked like he had it together. He had a mama that worked so hard, and he got every social skills group, every outside therapy, everything possible that we could think of to make this better, to take the edge off. And I mean, I feel like for him, we constantly sat at tables and they just kept saying he wasn't special enough. Right? Like, he does so many things well, and it almost seemed like a backhand compliment, right? Like, he's doing this so well. And it was like, oh my gosh, but do you know how we got there? Right? Like, do you know the challenges that we face getting there? And he can do that well in that one environment. And if you took him outside of that, it would look crazy, right? So he was the kid who, you know, we got denied an IEP over and over again. He was having behavior difficulties, and it wasn't until he was hitting, screaming, biting, scratching that I think we finally were able to move into IEP land. But he has been I call him my crack kid, which sounds terrible. I just always live life on the edge. You know, like, it's like I do all of these things really well, and then there's like this one thing over there that's like really not good. You know, like, I'm only going to show these things that I know how to do well, and then I'm going to fall apart when I get home, or I'm going to fall apart just in that one class because it's really hard. But every other class is going to be fine. So for sure, like, I don't have to tell moms or dads of or other parents, whatever, of kids on the autism spectrum, it is definitely a different world that is constantly filled with limits, right? Like in my child's situation, like he was high functioning. So that meant that they expected so much more of him, because he didn't look different, because he was talking, he wasn't nonverbal, he was expressive. You know, they didn't understand his behavior breakdowns. They didn't understand his lack of perspective taking. They didn't understand why he'd stand up in the middle of class and tell the teacher that that was the most boring lesson ever. And that happened. Yes. Yes.
Like, I mean, like to hear that. We've put our heart and soul into it.
Exactly. The best part, like, he's also like a really charming, charismatic son of a gun sometimes. Cause like the teacher was like calling me apologizing. I'm like, ah, no. Well, it really wasn't my best lesson. I'm like, no. It's a reinforced that behavior. Like, as far as you are concerned, it is the best lesson you've ever given in your whole life. But I mean, he's just been our kiddo who's had trouble behaviorally. You know, like, and it's been hard to figure out what that looks like as he's grown and matured. And as he's grown and matured, it has not ever been at the same rate as his peers. And so I think it's always been a challenge for us to like accept his limitations and where he's at, and to not constantly be comparing to where everybody else is at. And we are in that season now, right? Like, he is graduating, and it's so hard as a parent to not lament where you thought things were going to be, right? And he's come leaps and bounds, and we are so grateful to the Lord for, I mean, he is going to college. He is like, we are getting there. I mean, and I did not think, had you asked me 10 years ago, if this was going to be our path, I did not even think that was going to be a reality. But he is certainly the child who, I don't know, like every day we were presented with something new.
I hope that if anyone is watching, that you really, really just caught what she said about 10 years ago. She never would have thought, if you had said, where is he going to be in 10 years, that he would be getting ready to go to college, that he would be graduating, that he would be, you know, doing all the things that he is doing now. So for anyone who's in that boat right now thinking, oh my goodness, this is nowhere where I thought I was going to be able to be with my child at this point, or where I thought my child would be at this point. Hold on to the hope.
For sure.
Keep pushing through. Keep moving forward. Keep asking for the services, asking for the accommodations, looking up information about whatever your child might have. And keep pushing the people, the educators who are on the hook, so to speak, for providing a lot of that stuff. You know, the medical world, keep pushing them, you know, like you have to do, like you had to do for yourself.
Yeah.
Find there is something here. You know, this is not, yes, it's my normal, but it's not the average normal, you know. For your daughter, the things that she's gone through, and you know that she's already at 9 faced and busted through, keep doing those things. And so that's part of the whole no limits idea, is you really don't know what tomorrow is going to look like. You really don't know what 5 years or 10 years is going to look like. And so don't give up and say, this is it. This is as far as we're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you are a medical professional, a parent, an educator, a neighbor, just for yourself, don't give up. You know, I mean, yes, there are things, I know we can't all, you know, go to the moon, and we can't all be astronauts, and we can't all be the president. I mean, I get that. That's not what No Limits is about. Hashtag No Limits is about, there's still potential.
Right.
Don't stop reaching for that potential. And understand it might not be what you thought.
For sure. And never stop celebrating. If I could go back in like my son Elijah's journey, and I'm going to do better on Amelia because I have an age gap here. But like, I think sometimes we get so focused on the limit, right? And we get so focused on what society tells us this child, this situation, this disability is going to amount to, that we forget to celebrate the things that happen that are successes, right? I feel like that's a part of accepting no limits as well, is stopping and living in the celebration and not being worried about what the next potential limit will be. So if I could go back to my younger self in my younger years in parenting Elijah, I would soak in every moment of every celebration.
Yeah, that's awesome. And unfortunately, I try not to go longer than an hour, and we're almost there. I would love to continue to chat with you more. For those who, I mean, you and I will have an opportunity to get to know each other better.
For sure.
But for those who would like to follow your journey, how can they do that? How can they reach you?
Awesome. So you can hit up my website if you would like. It's www.veraklineeducationalservices.com, and I can leave that in the chat later. You can also take a look at my Facebook and Instagram page, either personally under Stephanie Vera Klein or professionally in the advocate world. I kind of like to keep those two things separately, in Vera Klein Educational Services. So you can follow me in either of those two, personally or professionally, on Facebook and Instagram.
Awesome. Stephanie, it's been awesome getting to know you today and learning about your family. And I truly am looking forward to getting to learn more about you and hopefully meeting you at one of the Master IEP Coach events that we do have in person. Most of it is online, but there are a few things in person every once in a while. So thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And just next week, I have Kim from Lives in the Balance, and make sure you tune in. And this is the first time this is being announced. On May 30th, Temple Grandin is my guest.
Whoops.
So it is Memorial Day Monday. It's not a Tuesday like normal. So May 30th, Temple Grandin, make sure if you know who that is, that you tune in and you have questions ready, because this is your opportunity. She doesn't do these kinds of things, like this one-on-one type of stuff. So tune in. I'm so excited to be able to share that with you and everybody else. And so thank you so much, everybody. And Stephanie, have a great day.
You too. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.